The ink on the signature of the new federal tax bill is hardly dry, and lawmakers are already trying to amend it. Congressman Rodney Davis of Taylorville has introduced H.R. 5396, the Graduate Assistant Parity Act. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with the 13th District Republican, who represents part of Bloomington-Normal, who says this bill continues a dispute that arose during the debate over the original tax bill.
We fought a fight during the tax reform bill. There were those in Washington who wanted to take away the entire section under the IRS code that allowed for tax-exempt tuition waivers. Now they're limited to research assistants and teaching assistants. We want to make sure that we allow tax-exempt tuition waivers to apply to those who may be working in the athletic department or in student affairs. These are people who are trying to, who are students here that are trying to reduce the amount of debt that they leave college with, and they ought to be able to get the same advantage when the institution like Illinois State or Illinois Wesleyan offers a tuition waiver to them. They ought to be taxed the same way a research and a teaching assistant is, which is zero.
How many people does this potentially affect nationwide?
Well, there's obviously the majority of the grad assistants that are eligible under Section 117D of the tax code for a tuition waiver and tax exemption. Majority of them are teaching and research assistants. However, this is a matter of fairness. I don't have the exact number, but if it affects one person adversely, like a former grad student who now works at the athletic department, Zach Schroeder, and a young student, Brentley, came in today at our press conference before I came here and talked about how it's affecting her as she's a grad assistant right now. So one is too many, Charlie.
Is there an estimated cost to the bill?
We just introduced the bill. We'll get an estimated cost, but keep in mind, the cost of the ever-rising student debt problem in this country is substantial. As we sit today, all auto and credit card debt combined does not equal the amount of student debt that exists in this country. We have to do something to continue to reduce the student debt load because that costs taxpayers on the back end with defaulted loans. So let's make sure we reduce the front end cost of college for students like Brentley and Zach.
This is how tax law progresses, though. I mean, there's a big generational shift in how the tax code looks, and then lots of different alterations happen, many with great motivations, many that have noble effects, and yet the tax code works its way back over the course of the next generation to something very complicated that needs to be looked at again. How can that cycle be interrupted so that we have relative predictivity?
This isn't rocket science here, Charlie, and this isn't complicated. It's just banking tuition waivers and tax exemption apply to any graduate assistant, regardless of whether you're a teaching or a research assistant. It's only fair, and that's why we're not looking to recreate tens of thousands of pages on this tax code like was done over the last 30 years before we reformed it and we reduced it down to substantially less pages. We want to make some fixes, and this is the process that you go through anytime you pass a bill. No bill is perfect, and part of what I have to do as a legislator is to determine whether or not to support a bill that may be 80 to 85% of what I want and what I think is addressing the overall problem. What we see here is the 15 to 20% that wasn't fixed the last time, and it's my job as a legislator to go now and address that 15 to 20% that still wasn't addressed. And this is one issue that was brought to me by the athletic department at Illinois State before the tax bill vote. We pushed for these provisions to be in the final rewrite of the tax bill. We weren't successful in that endeavor at that time, but there are many good things that happened in that tax bill that are putting more money in the pockets of grad assistants and grad students, no matter where they teach or matter where they do their research or where they work, which is helping them to reduce the cost of college.
Do you have a notion of who's going to carry the water in the Senate on this particular issue?
Well, we just introduced the bill with the support of my good friend, Democrat Mike Capuano from Massachusetts. Mike and I are going to be working together when we get back to try and build coalitions, not only in the Senate, but we have to build coalitions in the House.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Our guest today is Congressman Rodney Davis of Taylorville. You recently also spoke in support of the Stop School Violence Act that passed the House 407-10. What does that do?
What it does, it reauthorizes a partnership between the federal government and our local school districts. Before I got to Washington 5 years ago, there used to be a program that I worked with when I was a congressional staffer in my previous job. This Secure Our Schools program, run through the Department of Justice, used to allow school districts to partner with the federal government to help get funding for resource officers, training, materials, capital improvements that they may need to make security upgrades. These are the types of investments that I think need to be invested in again. This program, this bill then reauthorized those programs, and I was successful in leading a letter of many of my colleagues to ask for money to be appropriated to do these things. Rather than just have that program authorized, we had to fund it. And in the last omnibus bill that I supported, there was hundreds of millions of dollars to allow these partnerships to actually move to the forefront once again in the wake of the recent school shootings that we've seen.
You also voted for a bill to strengthen background checks. Unpack that one, would you? How much stronger?
The background check fix, closing loopholes in the National Criminal Instant Background Check System, was part of the omnibus bill that we passed too. So this is now law. We have to make the systems that are in place work better. There's no better examples of that than two of the recent tragedies that we've seen, be it in Parkland. We have changed the background check system. We now have closed any loopholes that may have existed, but we also have passed laws regarding mental health and getting teachers and getting school administrators, parents, and medical professionals engaged with somebody who may be mentally ill before they get to that crisis stage. We also have made sure that we've shown the light on the fact that even those who are not supposed to own guns, like the Sutherland Springs shooter, who was dishonorably discharged from the military, well, the military has to report that information to the National Criminal Instant Background Check System for it to be effective. The mistakes that were made on the ground in those two different instances that could have kept firearms out of the hands of two obviously mentally ill individuals were not followed. But we're doing what we can to make sure that we close any loophole in that background check system, and we did just that. When somebody is reported, it's an immediate report. It's an immediate reporting standard so that when anyone who may be mentally ill wants to go try to buy a firearm, it will pop up no matter where you are in this country, and they will not be allowed to buy that firearm.
We're still getting a lot of public attention on this issue. 800 cities across the U.S. had March for Our Lives participation by more than 1 million people over the weekend. About 1,000 people in Bloomington Normal demonstrated. There seems to be significant appetite for even more in background checks and a ban on semi-automatic long guns this time around to suppress casualty counts when measures on school security and mental health screening and background checks miss someone intent on evil. Can you get on board any of those proposals?
Well, I believe we have to start with the problems that existed. And when we look at Parkland, I urge any of your listeners, go take a look at the transcript of the caller who called into the FBI tip line and gave detail after detail after detail and concern after concern over that child who eventually committed the tragedy that he did at Parkland. And ask yourself when you read that, how in the world could anybody at a federal agency close that case without investigating it? The 39 times that the officers visited that shooter could have done something to prevent this tragedy. And as a matter of fact, that student was expelled for bringing a firearm to school. Our law enforcement officials and our local prosecutors have to prosecute anyone who makes the decision to do that and charge them with a felony. That would have stopped this young man from actually purchasing any firearms. So it's things on the ground that need to be addressed and laws that we already have. Why punish law-abiding citizens who are not part of the problem with enacting something that only addresses the firearm side of the equation of these tragedies? And I'll remind your listeners, it was a good guy with an AR-15 that stopped the Sutherland Springs shooter from actually wreaking more havoc and carnage.
How about a minimum age of 21 to buy a gun? That's another big ask from the Douglas High School students. What do you think?
Well, the minimum age to buy a firearm is usually regulated by the fact that, or does a parent think that that child is actually trained? I could be for discussing somewhat of an approval process, a graduated license, but my kids are 17, and I trust them to have their own shotgun. Let's make sure, again, we don't infringe upon those who are actually abiding by the law, those who are not committing crimes, and let's actually focus on the efforts that are going to reduce violence.
We do have this tension going in this country, and pronounced tension between public safety issues and the Second Amendment. How should we continue to mediate that tension?
Charlie, and it's a constitutional right to be able to defend yourself, and the Constitution allows us that right. So if there's a tension that you're talking about that is a growing movement nationwide, then a constitutional amendment would take the Second Amendment away. And I would fight like heck against that, because I believe law-abiding citizens ought to have the right to bear arms. It is those instances where we have changed the laws to address the mental health issues, to address those who should not have firearms, that under current law, they shouldn't be able to get them if they are reported correctly to the National Criminal Instant Background Check System. And in the Parkland shooter's case, again, how many more signs can be missed? And oh, by the way, we can't teach courage to school resource officers like the one in Parkland who stood outside and watched the carnage. I can tell you from personal experience, Charlie, I only know policemen that run towards gunfire and not away from them. And it's that type of courage that stopped more carnage just a few weeks ago in Maryland, when a school resource officer went in and had to make that dreadful decision to shoot upon a student who was shooting upon other students. But that's unfortunately what we have to do. And I would urge everyone in the media too, let's not glorify these shooters. Let's make sure we never mention the name of any of them. Because in the end, that's something I do as somebody who has experienced gun violence himself. The last person you'll ever hear me mention is the name of the crazed individual who screamed healthcare before he started firing on us. You will never hear that out of my mouth.
That's at the congressional baseball game practice that you attended. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Rodney Davis, Congressman, Republican from Taylorville, is our guest. You have just given full-throated support for the Second Amendment. Former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens has said in an op-ed today that the Second Amendment should be repealed, that the courts have now distorted it enough so that it is not useful to the nation, that the Heller decision allowing militias to be supplanted by individuals is, in his view, impermissible. What do you think of that line of argument?
I disagree with the former Supreme Court justice and wonder why he didn't push that while he was serving on the Supreme Court.
He did. He was in the minority on that decision.
Well, the Heller decision has allowed for opportunities for many law-abiding citizens here in Illinois to now be trained to carry a concealed weapon. And many of my constituents have taken advantage of those provisions. I'm frankly trained to be able to carry too. But I come at this as somebody who believes that anybody who's experienced gun violence, these students at Parkland, these students at the school in Maryland, those who survived Sutherland Springs, those who have survived the Pulse nightclub, they ought to be heard. Whether I agree or disagree with their stance on public policy, every victim, we all ought to be heard. Because I know the memories that I wake up with every day, and the fears and to the sounds that you see and hear that we used to take for granted. I know that hundreds of students in Parkland, Florida, are going to be experiencing the same things I do, and it's tragic for me to think about that. But in the end, as a victim myself of gun violence, I still am even more so protective of our constitutional right. I can tell you, when I was running from bullets that day, the thought that went through my mind was, I wish I'd have brought my gun to be able to fire back.
Shifting ground, your race in November will be against Betsy Dirksen Londrigan of Springfield. Which issues do you think will dominate this cycle?
Well, I've taken on all challenges. This is part of the process when you run for office every 2 years. I always look forward to a spirited challenge, sometimes from my own party, like I have in the past, and others from the other party. I think we're going to be talking about, you know, what is going to be the future direction of this country. I think we've got a great story to tell when it comes to putting more money in the pockets of middle-income and lower-income families right here in central Illinois. That tax bill has given employees that work at places like Walmart and Best Buy and Starbucks opportunities to put more money into their pockets, which is why I visited those stores and talked to the people that I represent, talked to them about what it means for the first time to have their company invest in them and also actually give them better benefits packages. It's CVS that made sure they invested $425 million nationwide in ensuring that no one who worked at CVS had to pay a penny more for health insurance for this next year, when we're seeing health insurance premiums continue to skyrocket, because we need to make some changes to this health care law that's been in place, which will be a big issue in this campaign.
What other areas will you be targeted on other than health care?
Well, we never know when the other side's going to target me on any certain areas, but I would anticipate the Democrats nationwide will try to make this a mandate on President Trump. And we're going to talk about where we've worked with this administration, where I've worked with the previous administration to get things done in Washington. I'm somebody who's been making Washington work. I work with whomever the president is, be it Barack Obama my first 4 years or Donald Trump my last 2 years. And we're going to continue to do that, have successes in the legislative arena, continue to make sure that we address the things that are important to those I represent back home. And at the same time, hopefully break through the hate and the vitriol that seems to just continue to get worse in politics every single day.
Congressman, thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Great to be with you.
Congressman Rodney Davis is a Republican from Taylorville. He spoke with Charlie Schlenker. This is GLT's Sound Ideas.